Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Welcome to the show. Are you concerned about what's happening with interest rates and yields and the stock market and everything else that's going on? Well, of course you are. You know, you should be, because it's a very unusual time and we need to talk to people who are in the know at times like this. And that's why we have our next guest, David Scranton of Scranton Financial Group and Sound Income Strategies. He's the CEO and founder. His offices are in Westbrook, Connecticut. And we're going to talk to him about some of these issues because, you know, David has been following these trends and can tell us about how you can turn your capital into income and still sleep at night. David, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Bill.
Thanks for coming on. So tell us a little bit about you and your background and how you started Scranton Financial Group and what you all do.
Well, I started 28 years ago as a life insurance agent, and that lasted about 6 months, and then I decided, gosh, there's so many more ways I can help people in the financial world than just life insurance, although life insurance can be a big value, and I started getting into the investment side. And since, you know, throughout the 80s and 90s, I was a stock market-based investment advisor, as many are, were back in the 80s and 90s, the best bull market in U.S. history. And then in 1998, I started to be concerned that the market was overvalued, it was going to take a hit, and it was going to take many, many years before things got better. So I made a decision at that point to change my business paradigm, and I changed over to be the person, at least then, the only person in my geographical area that specializes in income-based strategies versus growth-based strategies. Mm-hmm. And throughout that process, throughout that time period, I went ahead and got a master's degree in financial planning, and I also became a CFA, a chartered financial analyst. And for you know what a CFA is, a lot of your listeners may not. The CFA is typically regarded as the highest regarded credential on Wall Street. They're usually the guys with the horn-rimmed glasses that sit in the back rooms and do all the analysis, but they're not allowed to talk to the customers anymore because they don't have the personality. So fortunately, I get the best of both worlds. I get to work with people every day and solve real problems face-to-face, but I also enjoy the analysis part too.
Yeah, it's quite a lineup of credentials that you have, and it is kind of unusual to see all of them behind one name, but you've done a lot to establish credibility, and you have to have a lot of patience and knowledge to take all of, to get all these designations. So that speaks volumes for you. And you mentioned that, you know, a lot of people these days are thinking about income-based strategies. And is that just because of the demographics out there today?
Well, in part, it's because the demographics of my clientele, the demographics of your listeners, same thing, should be investing more for income instead of growth. Especially business owners. You know, if you think about it, there's a difference between buying shares of a stock in which you don't really have a lot of control versus owning your own company. If you're a good CEO and a good business owner, you know, you actually have a lot of control because you own majority share in that company. When you're buying a stock, you're relying on other people to manage it, and then you're subject to the fickle whims of Wall Street. And up until a year and a half ago, from 2000 through the summer of 2013, the fickle whims of Wall Street weren't too kind. So yes, generally speaking, people 55 and over tend to gravitate toward income, or at least should. And I found since the turn of the century, it's even more popular because the great bull market of the 80s and 90s is now over.
Mm-hmm. And you know, another factor these days is that your traditional hedge against stocks would be in some kind of a bond portfolio, but those interest rates have been held down for so long. Are you concerned about the effect on bonds that a rise in interest rates could cause?
You know, that's a great question. I get that all the time. Short-term, middle-term, no. Long-term, yes, interest rates can go up, and that can cause bonds to drop in value. But I don't see that happening right away. And there's several reasons. First is that we pulled back on this last quantitative easing. And for any listeners that don't know what that is, that's where the Federal Reserve in our country was basically spending $85 billion a month to create an artificial demand for our own government bonds and mortgage bonds with an effort to drive down long-term interest rates. Why? Because hopefully by doing so, they'll stimulate borrowing and can therefore stimulate the economy. Well, as the Federal Reserve pulled back on that throughout 2014, it would logically stand the reason that longer-term interest rates should go up. But what's happened since they stopped this quantitative easing is the long-term interest rates, for example, that on our own 10-year government bond, actually dropped by 0.5%. And the reason for that is because of the bad shape that Europe is in. Because Europe is in such bad shape, they've driven down their interest rates there, and it creates kind of sort of a governor with our interest rates, where our interest rates really can't pop up. You know, if you've got a 10-year bond in our country paying 1.8, and you've got countries that theoretically have more default risk, like Italy and Spain, that are paying less interest than that, well, you know, that has to come into equilibrium at some time. So that acts as a glass ceiling where our interest rates really cannot go up anytime soon until the rest of the world starts to recover from recession.
So let me ask you a question. Did the government's intervention in keeping interest rates low with quantitative easing create this stock market rise because of taking away alternatives to investors? Just in your opinion.
A good part of it, absolutely, because it's called getting pushed up the risk curve. You know, most people look at the low interest rates, and I'm sure the Federal Reserve knew this too. That's not their job to increase the stock market. But they also know that if they want people to spend more money, people spend more money when they feel wealthy. And by lowering the interest rates on fixed alternatives, more people throw up their hands, throw their money in the stock market. That drives the stock market up. And the theory is that when people feel more affluent, maybe they'll go out and spend more money. However, it didn't quite work as well as the government had hoped, the Federal Reserve had hoped. Because if you think about it, we've got a whole generation of investors now who over the 15 years had gotten bitten twice by the stock market and once by the real estate market. So they've gotten a lot more conservative and started saving more money and spending less because they realize they need to fend for themselves if they plan to retire.
That's excellent. Excellent suggestions. Obviously, we look at people look at their 401k statements, say in their retirement plans, and there's trillions of dollars in retirement plans, and they look at their once a quarter they get that statement, and it shows stocks good, bonds bad, money market's horrible. So it kind of, like you said, pushes them up that risk curve. So the big question is, are people forgetting what the market can do, or are they putting themselves at risk? Let's talk about interest rates again. What do you see happening with interest rates in 2015?
In 2015, this may sound like a strange statement, but I wouldn't be surprised if long-term interest rates, such as the 10-year Treasury, are actually lower by the end of the year. If it's 1.8% now, I wouldn't be surprised if it's actually lower. And the reason I say that is because, you know, we talked about how Spanish and Italy bonds are riskier than ours, but paying less interest. Well, right now, a lot of your listeners may not. Right now, Switzerland had done some things, lowering their interest rates into negative territory. So if somebody were to buy a Swiss bond right now, which is considered to be really safe, a Swiss 10-year bond, the interest rate as of this morning was -0.25% per year. So literally, it's like paying the Swiss government to hold your money. Mm-hmm. Then coupled with the fact that they just came out yesterday, the euro came out yesterday and basically said that they're going to do their own quantitative easing in the European Union, that's going to push rates down there even lower, which is going to hold our rates down or maybe even cause them to get lower. Everybody says Janet Yellen's going to raise rates by the end of the year. I think there's more than a 50% chance that she will not be able to raise rates before the end of the year. Why? Because if she does and she flattens the yield curve where short-term and long-term rates are the same, now banks don't lend. And when banks don't lend, that's bad for the economy.
That's fascinating. I mean, there's not much incentive if you've got the same yield on a long-term bond or a short-term bond. There's not that much incentive to go long-term, that's for sure.
That's right. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, you get hammered when rates do go up on the longer-term bonds too. So, I mean, it's got to happen. It's inevitable. We gotta get off of this this low yield at some point and pull these Band-Aids off. And the question is, what's going to happen to the stock market when that happens? That's what people are wondering, I think, long term. What do you think the stock market's going to be looking like this year?
Well, I was actually recently on CNBC, and they asked me the same question. They said, well, what's your prognosis? And I said, well, I think we're going to have a double-digit year in the stock market this year. And then I paused, and I said, but the problem is I can't tell you whether it's going to be double digits on the upside or the downside. Because, you know, it's kind of like we have this outbound tide due to the fact that QE has ended and our stock market, that wealth effect is gone, that stock market should start to settle down. But we've got this storm surge that's keeping the tide from releasing, keeping the tide from going out. The storm surge I'm referring to is the fact that because Europe is in such bad shape economically right now, economically we are kind of sort of the cleanest dirty shirt in the hamper.
Well, that's a great analogy. I can picture that. The tide is way, way out, but the surge makes it look like everything's normal.
Correct. So I see a lot of volatility in 2015. I think it's going to be a good year or a really bad year, nothing in between. And it depends upon how aggressive Europe is with their actions. The decision they made yesterday to actually do quantitative easing increases the chance that the stock market has a good year on the upside this year. But eventually, that tide will overpower the storm surge, and the tide will go out, and the market will have another significant drop. Now, whether that's in 2015 or 16 or 17, that's unfortunately what, as you know, that nobody can predict for sure.
Right. Now, what's your take on the low, you know, the oil prices and their effect on other asset classes, David?
Well, in theory, the oil prices being low should be good for the economy because, you know, the reason oil fuel is not considered in the CPI index is because, at least the argument goes, that it's factored into every good and service because every good has to be delivered to the retail end user, and therefore it's part of the inflation rate. But the other issue is, you know, what I see it as is an indicator that we have a bigger chance of deflation than inflation. You know, the Federal Reserve has been trying to inflate our dollar and cause inflation in our country, and not inflate the dollar, but cause inflation in our country, and they've really not been able to do it. So now this is another deflationary pressure at a time when a good part of Europe is going into deflation. And, you know, it's really impossible for the United States, one country in a world economy, to create enough demand to prevent that deflation from spreading here. So my concern is I think that the fuel prices being low is a sign that we could very well be stepping into that environment, which means, you know, buying bonds, even if you're at 4 or 5%, maybe a lower interest rate than you like, isn't necessarily a bad thing. Could be a very good thing, fixed income at lower rates, if you believe you're more likely to have deflation than inflation.
Great comments there. Now, when you're thinking about the demographics of America, and you got this baby boomer population that at the youngest is now age 51, I guess, and
right,
at the oldest is age 67. So we've got this huge number of people that are reaching retirement age and thinking about flight to safety. Maybe they've built it up in their 401ks and their stock market. Is there the outlook that this huge pig in the python, like they call it, the baby boomer demographic, is going to swing the market from stock-based investments to conservative and income-based investments?
It should. Now, a lot of people, baby boomers, had gotten addicted to the stock market in the 80s and 90s, the best bull market in U.S. history. So it's not happening to the effect that it should. But I think another drop in the stock market, a lot of people will wake up and will make that change.
Mm-hmm.
That would create continued downward pressure on interest rates, keep interest rates low because the demand for fixed income securities, which means that people need to make sure they save as much as they can before they retire. But the other side of the coin is if that money flows out of equities into fixed income, then that doesn't necessarily bode well for the stock market in the years to come either.
Yeah, and the big problem is, let's say you're a business owner, you sell your business, you pay your taxes, now you're trying to reinvest your capital into something that's going to replace the income you made from the business. You know, most planning relies on at least a 4 or 5% interest rate. And so what asset classes should people be looking at? What do you help people look at when they're looking for income on their investments these days?
We're one of the few investment advisory firms that actually specializes in active management of individual fixed income securities, individual municipal bonds, individual investment grade corporate bonds, maybe slightly lower quality corporate bonds, double B rated, preferreds, all the things that you invest in for income instead of growth. We try to get the growth through the active management, but not by crossing our fingers and toes and owning stocks and hoping for growth. And notice I didn't say bond mutual funds, because I always want to plan on plan B. What if I'm wrong? What if rates do go up shortly? Well, if our clients own individual bonds and interest rates go up, yeah, they'll take a loss on paper, but as long as they decide not to sell that bond before maturity, it's only a paper loss, because when that bond matures, they get the face value back along with all their interest. But if that person owns a bond fund alternatively, and interest rates should skyrocket, then that loss isn't just a paper loss, it's an actual loss. So I believe that since 1981, we've had gradually decreasing interest rates for the most part, and most advisors got a little bit lazy that fixed income became an afterthought. And when they put somebody in fixed income, they buy bond funds instead of individual bonds because it's easier for the advisor to do. But I believe now that rates are so low, I think it's really, really dangerous. It's important for people to focus on individual fixed income securities, and they need to be actively managed at the same time in case rates go in the other direction.
Well, that's our time for today. But, David, you have a website that our listeners can go to learn more, I believe, at soundincomestrategies.com, correct?
That is it. Yes, sir.
soundincomestrategies.com. Very enlightening, very clear interview. Is there another way for people to get in touch with you, or is that the best first way for them to get in touch?
Sure. If they have questions, they call my office right here in Connecticut. The number is 860-399-8202. Again, 860-399-8202.
Well, it's been fascinating having you on. It's been a really great interview. I'm sorry our time went by so quickly, but I look forward to the next time we talk, and I wish you the best of luck. Thanks for joining us.
All right, Bill. Thanks so much.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with another guest, so please stay tuned.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com. The information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.